Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, the Guardian's Turn 2 podcast for all the technology news that's fit to discuss. Most of it you can also read on guardian.co.uk, but some of it is pod only and hopefully pod gold. I'm Alex Kratosky, and gracing Guardian Tower's pod studio this week are regulars Bobby Johnson and Jemima Kish. Hello, welcome back from the bank holiday weekend. How are you?
I'm staring at the Oreo.
You are. It's staring right back at you.
I can't even see it. Each podcast is sponsored by a biscuit. This is something listeners
That's
need to
sponsored in inverted commas.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
As in, we eat them.
Anyway, on today's show, we welcome Guardian legend Jack Schofield, who dissects the rumors about Microsoft's Windows 7. Chiming in is PC pros John Honeyball for the skinny for what we should look out for in the new operating system. We also hear from Rumble.com, a Cambridge-based startup that aims to add fuel to the new location-based services available on Yahoo's Fire Eagle. Keep listening for more. Plus the latest news on the site and words of wisdom from you on the blogs. Stick around for 30 minutes of scintillation. It seems like it was just last year that Microsoft released a new operating system to consumers. Well, yes, it was. But now, coming quickly in the wake of Vista, is news of the next iteration, cleverly titled Windows 7. Joining in to talk us through the details are the technology section's own agony uncle, Jack Schofield, and independent consultant and PC Pro contributor, John Honeybell. Welcome to you both.
Hi there.
So, Jack, why is Windows 7? Why are people talking about it so quickly after the release of Vista?
Because Microsoft has to talk about it very soon in October. Because it has the Professional Developers Conference and it has WinHack, which is a Windows Hardware Engineering Conference. And if it wants thousands of PC manufacturers to ship Windows 7 and thousands of people to write code for Windows 7, it has to tell them what's in it. And, you know, unfortunately, this means that everybody else will find out as well.
And the hype builds and builds.
Beta. Well, yes, the main problem this year is trying to hold back the hype, I think.
Do you think that that's one of the reasons why Vista kind of floundered a bit, is because the hype had built so much?
Yes, because it took so long. The guy who's currently in charge of Windows used to be the guy in charge of Office, Steve Sinofsky, and he believes in being translucent but not transparent, as he puts it. He doesn't really want to tell you anything that he's not going to deliver. So it's low expectations and then, you know, under-promise and over-deliver. That's the idea now, because Vista clearly over-promised and under-delivered.
Now, have we seen any shifts? Because certainly I've seen quite a few ads and spoof videos about Vista that have, shall we say, been in Apple's favor. And Jack, I'm wondering if we've seen any actual bottom line impact of these effects of Vista on the distribution of machines?
I don't think you'd see any difference because Apple's such a small part of the market. It's 2.5%, 3.5%. So even if Apple's market share doubled, it wouldn't actually make any difference to the great PC market. There are things that Microsoft is much more concerned about than other people might be, one of which, as I'm sure John appreciates, is piracy. Another one is what they call the mix, I suppose. It's how many people spend more on the ultimate version, because this is where the money comes in.
I think another problem here is that Microsoft is saying Vista is being a big success and it's having a big impact on the marketplace, but they refuse to actually give out the numbers. And we have vendors like Dell who will quite happily sell you a machine today with Vista on it, and for sometimes no extra money, zero extra cost, you can have Windows XP installed as a downgrade right, but with a Vista installed DVD provided as well. So for those machines, it's actually very hard to know what the true install base is of Vista. And even if you, as I said, you go and look at, for example, the Dell website, and you can have Vista Ultimate for a few tens of pounds extra over and above a lesser version. So this is a whole distortion of the pricing model that Microsoft tried to come with to market with. And it was only back in February this year that they had a major realignment of the pricing strategy for Vista, because clearly it wasn't washing. Now, Microsoft has got the numbers of the install base for Vista worldwide because they run the update server. And the update server pushes out all of the updates to all the various versions of Windows, to all those desktop machines. So Microsoft has got an extremely clear idea of how big the Vista install base is, but they're not telling. And the inevitable conclusion here is they're not telling because they don't want us to know.
What is Windows 7 going to be like? What's it going to be to use? If they're only letting a few things out, what do we know already?
The big unveiling, the big opening of the kimono is going to be at the end of October at the Professional Developers Conference. PDCs from Microsoft are very important events. These are events when 5,000-6,000 software developers come together to see the total offering from Microsoft that's going to be fueling their developments over the next 2 to 3 years. Ray Ozzie has taken over the company for the last 2 years. He's been changing the direction of the company. He's been pushing for a software as a service architecture, very much applications distributed between desktops and servers, but also into the cloud. And Microsoft has been spending millions of dollars, even billions of dollars on this. But it's now 2 years on, and now Ray really has to deliver. Build out the company. My guess, based upon what I've heard so far, is that it's going to be a bit of a damp squib. And there also, the rumor mill is that Windows 7 will be shipping, or will be finished, sometime second half-ish of next year. If that's the case, then unfortunately, there isn't a great deal of time to do major structural changes to the actual building blocks of Vista. The rumor mills are talking about touchscreen interfaces, multi-screen, multi-touch, and jazzing up the graphical user interface to make it more worthwhile.
You mentioned things like the touchscreen. This certainly has been something that we've been talking about, you know, that people have talked about the most because they see it as, you know, Minority Report and this and that and the other. Mm. And Jack, what are some of the other features that we can expect?
Well, we've had touchscreens for a long time, of course, because we've had, you know, the tablet PC aim. The actual difference is multi-touch, and that's become more of a point of interest because multi-touch screens are now cheaper than they used to be. Other than that, I think there's a lot of window dressing, and I don't think there's a lot in it for Microsoft to change the interface because, you know, people were relatively upset by novelty. You know, you can make it better, but then you upset them by changing things that they were already familiar with. There's the so-called superbar. Is that a goer, do you think, John?
What is the superbar?
New ways of doing the same things yet again. Let's jazz them up a bit.
So a taskbar on steroids.
Yes, but I mean, again, that's got to really be shown to deliver end-user value and be easy to use and supported by third-party applications. Up till now, the bar that we've had on the right-hand side of the screen on Vista has been very minimally supported by third-party applications, which is a real shame.
If you look at it from Microsoft's point of view, the bulk of the money is coming from corporations. And the amount of money that's coming from consumers making, you know, kind of relatively small choices isn't very significant. So I think that probably my reading is that the corporates want less change, not more change, and that they ought to be worried about how they get to 64-bit if they're not already.
Well, we do look forward to seeing what happens with this over the next, I don't know, when is the ETA for this product?
They're not giving a
date. Some are saying 2009. Some are saying beginning of 2010. I'm going to be really cynical and say end of 2010.
Yes. I would say probably the most likely is February, March 2010. But we're going to know because they're going to have a beta test. We're going to use it for a year before they actually ship it. I mean, there'll be no surprises by the time that happens.
Well, thank you very much, John, and to Jack. You can read more about this on guardian.co.uk/technology. For better or for worse, There's a real trend by web companies to collect data about you in return for more personalized services, targeted advertising, and more relevant results on first click. Well, we tracked down Cambridge-based Rumble.com. I like saying that, Rumble.com, who are one of the UK companies fighting for pole position in this scene, and asked them into the elevator pitch Lift of Dreams.
Welcome to Elevator Pitch.
Welcome. Ground floor. Please mind the doors.
Which floor would you like?
The very top, please.
Going up.
So, who are you and what's your company?
My name is Andrew Scott and I'm founder of Rumble.
Okay, then. Explain your business to my mum in two sentences.
Okay, so Rumble makes it easy to find people and places nearby that you like. So rather than find everything nearby, we find the things that are relevant to you and have context to where you are and what you're doing, time of day, location, and all that other good stuff.
First floor.
And tell me about your background.
I'm a serial entrepreneur for my sins. Got kicked out of college and started a company. The internet came along and went into web development. Did some interesting projects, including the world's first online digital news archive. British Pathé, and I've been running businesses and startups since.
So how are you funded then?
Angel funded thus far. We've had three rounds of angel funding and we're just going now into a Series A shortly.
And this makes money how?
Currently we don't, but from mid-2009 we'll make money from location-based advertising. Which is socially recommended advertising. So in other words, if someone advertises a venue nearby, then we can tell whether it's your friends have been there and whether it's recommended by your friends or not.
Second floor.
Okay, so who are you competing with?
Okay, there's a US company called Whirl out in Seattle. And there are other people not doing the same thing as us, but there's probably overlap. So local search on mobile, for example, provides information in a very different way to us, but they probably see us as a competitor because we're still providing information for a specific location.
Third floor.
Do you think there's a new Web 2 bubble?
I think the difference between now and before is that before there was a lot of money being invested which wouldn't normally invest in tech. So you had a lot of people who don't understand the industry, a lot of people either taking themselves for a ride or being taken for a ride, whereas most of the money going in now is still is money that would have gone into tech anyway. So no, I don't think we're in the bubble, or at least not the same type of bubble.
So what's your biggest challenge?
Okay, the biggest challenge, as I think many companies face, is probably finding talent. We want people who are very passionate about our business and are passionate about the technology, and those people are very hard to find.
Fourth floor.
What's the weirdest business experience you've had so far?
It's got to be the DNA guinea pig. When I was running a web development, my web development company, one of my first companies, during the dot-com bubble, we had a company that was online and you could send them the DNA of your pet so that in future they could reclone your pet if it died.
And if you had £10 million to invest in any company other than your own, what would you invest in?
Ah, it's a tricky one. I think there are a lot of interesting companies in the Web 3.0 area, which, you know, Semantic's doing similar things to us, analysing data and information. Powerset is a US company which does semantic search. There's another one recently called SearchMe, which is a new visual search engine, which is quite impressive as well.
Fifth floor.
So where do you want to be in 5 years' time?
We want Rumble to be synonymous with location-based information. So in the same way that you say you could Google that, you can say, did you Rumble it?
Basement.
This is the basement.
It is indeed the basement. Welcome to the basement. Location-based services to me make me think of being tracked and having people sort of suck my information away from
me. Yeah, but this is a web-based service that you go to, you know. This is not like Form or something where, you know, your internet service provider is tracking what you're going to. This is an opt-in web-based service, so don't be concerned. I think there are quite a few services in this space, as he said. Kype is another one that's in the UK. Looped, World, even Doppler to some extent, and I'm never quite sure how you pronounce it, but it's either Zibe or Zib. What this is really about is recommendation, which is a huge Web 2 trend, and combining that with a business model around using that location and taking information that is useful to you, that you want, because it has an algorithm that will work out what you like and what you've liked in the past. And they can obviously then build a business model around that from the local businesses. So it's fairly benign, really, in terms of how it tracks what you're doing.
So I don't need to put the aluminum foil hat on.
It's not quite 1984.
No, that's good. So you say that it knows based upon what you've done before, which means that you need to be involved with this for quite a while before you can get the most effective use out of it.
Your friends will have recommended places to you. So, I don't know, you might be on Portobello Road on a Saturday and you'll walk past a cafe and, I don't know, your friend was in there the week before and, you know, they'll know where you are and they'll say, ah, there's a good cafe around the corner, which actually is something that we do. Sorry to talk about Twitter again, but that is the kind of thing you do.
It's
you
a
say,
weekly thing.
Does anyone know a really good bar I need to organise or something or other? And you tend to do that on Twitter. So this is just a more focused way of doing that. I think the biggest challenge for these kind of services has been getting traction. It's been getting scale because they're a small name and they're not that known and they have to try and build an audience. And that really is their biggest challenge.
Yeah. And you know, how do you get to, like you said, you know, you want to join it and have something useful from the start. I mean, if you go and look at something like Last.fm, the more you interact with it, the better it becomes. But if you go and want to do the kind of the basic level of interaction, you can still get to listen to music you like. So the crucial thing is, how do you get that basic level of service? And I think the problem with a lot of location-based services or any of these recommendation things is that if your model is based around advertising by people who, you know, things are being recommended to you in a roundabout way through advertising, then there's a very short step from that being useful and that being spam. And you have to be really careful, because if you turn off a user right at the beginning, then you've lost them and you've lost the power of their network as well. We've heard a lot about location-based services for a very long time, and nobody's ever quite done it. I think what the real power is in learning about your local market. You know, this is one place that actually you can be better if you're a British company for British users than you can, you know, somebody from Silicon Valley doesn't have the same way to plug into your local geography.
And in that market, do you see that there's a particular trend in the UK to do that? Or would you say that this is something that happens around the world?
Not particularly, but I think what's key to mention here is that Rumble have joined up with Fire Eagle, that we've talked about a few times on the podcast now. And the really interesting trend is that just like iPhone and Facebook have become a kind of hub for other businesses, that's exactly what Fire Eagle is doing. And as I said, a business like this that is a kind of standalone new brand has to build that audience, and it's so much easier for them to build that audience through Yahoo, which has a huge consumer base, and consumers just need to get their head around Fire Eagle once, and suddenly they're going to have hundreds of services that they're that much more inclined to use.
Well, thank you very much, and you can read up on rumble.com on blogs.guardian.co.uk/digital-content. And speaking of blogs, it's time to hear what you've been saying over the past little while. Bobby, what's been happening over on technology?
Well, I thought we'd go back to the Windows 7 question because we've posted a few times about it, and there have been some amusing comments. One was we were asking, what would you call it? And somebody said, how about WinGE, as in whinge?
Oh.
That's Deditos, who says, call it WinGE because... That's Microsoft thinks that that's all their Vista customers seem to do. Somebody called Spiked is Whack said maybe it will be Windows double glazed or Windows boarded up.
I'm sorry, he missed off the medals table.
Yeah. Oh, I quite like that. Honorable mention.
This was one of my favourite comments for quite a long time on the tech blog. When in the conversation, Jack said that the cost of running Office was about 10p a day. And Spiked his whack again, said 10p a day for someone to smack you in the face is still more than I'd like to pay. To which C.S. Clarke, one of our regular commenters, said, yeah, Spiked is Whack is right. After all, with Open Office, I can get punched in the face for free. That just summed it all up for me.
Well, didn't get much of a laugh here, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, that's because you're not proper geeks.
I wear that badge with pride. Anyway, on the games blog, she says, as a geek, a couple of weeks ago, there was a program on gaming and literacy on Radio 4 in the morning. Actually, it was on the Today program. And Ian Rankin was on.
Oh,
and,
God. Yes, you just know what that's going to be like.
Well, he was quite adamant that actually people play computer games, and computer games are actually a source of literacy, but it's not a source that, and use the internet, but it's not a source that kids and teachers actually support in the classroom. And Consilarium, he's got quite a long quote here, but he was very supportive of this argument. He said, of course, games can help develop literacy skills and any other curricular outcome, providing, of course, that the teaching is sound, the game is appropriate, and a bit of imagination is used. He says that they use games in schools and classes throughout Scotland. Things like Dr. Kawashima's Brain Training, Guitar Hero, Nintendogs, Hotel Dusk, Phoenix Wright, and he lists all kinds of games that that they use actually in schools. He says, let's not knock the idea. Let's look at how we can make more and better use of the rich and dynamic world of games and how they can continue to enthuse and excite learners and help them view school as a place that they want to be.
I'd love to hear what Jane McGonigal has to say about games as a role in education and how they can help children's development, and not just children actually, but
about everybody, absolutely. Yeah. And Jane McGonigal is, of course, she's one of the people who was involved with World Without Oil, which was a UN alternate reality game that had people think about a world without oil. But QA David, who's another regular, threw something in. He says, don't know about games helping literacy, but Leisure Suit Larry should replace sex ed for sure. So anyway, keep chatting. We'd like to know more from you. So head over to blogs.guardian.co.uk/games/technology/digital-content so Jemima can have something to say next week.
Sorry. It was bank holiday.
It was.
And least slow week.
Yeah, come over to Facebook where our I Love the Guardians Tech Weekly podcast group has received many supportive comments in response to our request for a tutorial on how Bobby can use the new
all
site.
Right, all right.
Technology.
I don't
hard.
Deal with change.
How are you going to deal with Windows 7 then? Anyway, don't forget
I'll
to
use
see
a Mac.
Oh. Drawing the line in the sand. Don't forget to see pictures of our lovely guests on our Flickr group, which is Guardian Tech Weekly. And please do let us know what you're up to at tech@guardian.co.uk. Well, that's it for this week. Many thanks to our guests, Jack Schofield, John Honeyball, and Andrew Scott. Three cheers as well to Jemima, Bobby, and to producer Scott for pulling off yet another podcast by the skin of our teeth.
Hip hip hooray.
Woo! And indeed, let's just have a quick moment because Bobby, this is your last podcast in the studio, isn't it?
It is. It is. I'm the Guardian in its infinite wisdom has seen fit to move me away from the dreary London and off to the sunny San Francisco.
So straight in the heart of the lion's den.
I will still be here in your ears, people, every week, I'll be coming from the West Coast.
Is it sort of a bit...
And you'll not be talking like that, I'll tell you.
Is it a bit, here's 50p, go play in the next street sort of thing?
Yeah, I suspect there may be some of that. It's like, out of sight, out of mind, I think is part of it.
Well, you won't be out of sight or out of mind.
But it also,
we'll be out of sight, but
it also means for our lovely American listeners, I will be there in your valley, ready to see what's going on.
I'm in your valley looking at your businesses or something. Sort of like Ceiling Cat, but not. Didn't quite work, did it?
We'll have a jolly good time, fellow.
I'll still be here virtually.
I'm sure you will. But actually, that's a good point. If anybody has any suggestions for what Bobby should see or do in Northern California, then do send over your suggestions. We're back next week. That's me and Jemima, because Bobby, you're actually going to be on holiday. Lucky man. Enjoy.
Moving,
of course. And so we shall see you next Tuesday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.